every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise
high as the
a couple of years ago. Four little girls were killed in Alabama. And at that time, we got the inspiration to do this song. But Dr. King's murder has left me so numb, I don't know where I'm at, really. And of course you heard this song that was composed by Gene Taylor, especially for today. But I hope that between now and the end of the year, it'll all be together enough that we will have songs that go down in history for these wonderful, brave people who are no longer with us. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! Can't you see it? I know you can feel it. It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama has got me so upset, and Memphis has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Hound dogs on my trail, little school children sitting in jail. Black cat crossed my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord, have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. 'Cause I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. You keep on saying go slow. Well, that's just the truth. trouble.
Too low.
Washing the windows.
Too low.
Picking the cotton.
Too low.
Nothing but rotten.
Too low.
Too damn lazy.
Too low.
Thinking's crazy.
Too low.
Try to do my very best. Stand up, be counted with all the rest. 'Cause everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! Now you heard him. He's one of you. If you have been moved at all, and you know my songs at all, for God's sakes, join me. Don't sit back there. The time is too late now. Good God. You know, the king is dead. The king of love is dead. I ain't about to be nonviolent, honey. Oh, no. Picket lines, school boy cops. They try to say it's a communist plot. But all I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. And I loved him because he believed it. He lived by it. But you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady, and you stopped calling my mama Aunt Sadie. Hear me now. But my country is full of lies. We all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust nobody anymore. Keep on saying, go slow. That's just the trouble.
Too low.
Desegregation.
Too low.
Mass participation.
Too low.
Unification.
Too low.
Do things gradually.
Too low.
To me, just give me my equality, 'cause everybody knows about Mississippi, everybody knows about Alabama, everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn, that's it.
Shay.
Ashe.
We'll pour it to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour it to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shillit, the Noor. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward coasts. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nandi of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Kwame Ture,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers.
Ellen Jacob.
And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
Ashe. History
is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography.
Mm-hmm.
History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with hosts the Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think@out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Good evening. This is Dr. Janine James here from the Sankofa Council of Elders. And it is indeed a pleasure to be here today. I am so excited because we are here talking about supporting our future physicians. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart,
because
especially in this time of pandemic and where we're seeing some of the frontline health professionals, they have to have somebody who has helped them get to that point. And so this is that opportunity for us to talk about what goes into supporting our future physicians. Now, this is interesting that all of the guests today are the parents, the mothers of female African-American physicians or health professionals. And so we're to have them here. And we're looking forward to hearing from them. We're looking forward to you calling in to learn more about what it takes to make a physician. And I want you to welcome along with me our guests that are here today. We're so happy also to have our Sankofa co-host with us today, Sister Dee Dee Conley. So we are in for a treat today. The purpose of the Sankofa Council from our bylaws is that this is an organization that is using African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community. Supporting our future physicians means to discuss the journey to become a physician. It's a long and challenging and mysterious one. It requires the support of many people. It's a community that gets us where we need to be. We want our community to know what roles must be played to support our youth who express a desire to become physicians. The African ancestry, Mayotte principle of justice, and the Nguza Saba principle, Imani, are important concepts for our survival. We are delighted to be able to talk about our ancestral profile for today. Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, ma'am. How are you? And thank you so much, Dr. James.
we're so happy for you to share with us somebody, again, another exciting ancestor who also is somebody that we need to know about. And Sister Dee Dee, what are you going to tell us?
No secret.
Our ancestor.
That's no secret, Dr. James. Peace and blessings, family. And for one of our ancestors today, like Dr. James said, which is near and dear to her heart, I'm sure. But there's a young lady, her name was matter of fact, she was the first African-American physician, doctor. Amen to that. Anyway, her name was Dr. Rebecca Davis Lee Crumpler, was the first African-American woman doctor in the United States. She completed medical school at the New England Female Medical College and received her MD in 1864. Miss Rebecca was born free, amen to that, on February 8th, 1831, to Absalom and Matilda Weber Davis in Christina, Delaware. She was raised by her aunt in Pennsylvania, who is noted to have provided health care to her neighbors. Dr. Rebecca, as a teenager, attended the West Newton English and Classical School in West Newton, Massachusetts. By 1852, 21-year-old Davis was living in Charlestown, Massachusetts, where she worked as a nurse for 8 years. She enrolled in the New England Female Medical College in 1860. Her exception at the college was highly unusual, as most medical schools at that time. It did not admit African Americans, and there were no black female doctors among the 54,000 physicians in the United States. At that time, only 300 white women were doctors. Despite the institution admitted Miss Davis, she won a tuition award from the Wade Scholarship Fund, created by the Ohio Abolishment, Benjamin Wade, and she graduated on March 1st, 1864. 4 years after her admission to the institution, while living in Charleston, Rebecca Davis married Wyatt Lee, a Virginia native and former slave. Lee died of tuberculosis on April 18, 1863. 2 years later, on May 24, 1865, she married Arthur Crumpler in St. John, New Brunswick, Canada, a former slave who served in the Union Army, eventually worked at the West Newton English and Classical School. The couple had one daughter, Lizzie Sinclair, born in 1870. Dr. Rebecca first practiced medicine in Boston and specialized in the care of women, children, and the poor. She moved to Raymond, Virginia in 1865 to minister to free people. Dr. Rebecca returned to Boston in 1869, where she practiced from her home on Beacon Hill and dispensed nutrition advice to poor women and children. In 1883, she published a medical guidebook, the Book of Medical Discourses, which primarily gave advice for women in the health care of their families. Dr. Rebecca died on March 9th, 1895, in the Hyde Park section of Boston, and was buried in a nearby Fairview Cemetery. She was 64 at the time of her death. In 1989, she was honored for her groundbreaking achievement when Sandra Robinson, MD, and Patricia Whitley, MD, founded the Rebecca Lee Society, an organization which supports and promotes Black women physicians. Thank you so much, you all. Isn't that something?
Sister Dee, thank you. We appreciate
you are so welcome.
Learning and have an opportunity to learn about another one of our ancestors. And this gives me a great opportunity to welcome our guests, who are Mrs. Annie Mitchell Cromwell, who is the mother of Taylor Cromwell, Mrs. Renee Carnathan, who is the mother of Alexandra Carnathan, and the third guest who is here in her spirit is Mrs. Mitzi Joan Patterson, who is the mother of Layla Nicole Patterson. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start out with Annie. Annie Mitchell is a nurse. She immigrated from Guyana. She trained in New York City and in Atlanta. She worked for many years for Kaiser in Atlanta and recently retired. She's been the mother of two children. She has a son and a daughter. Her daughter attended Tennessee State University, where she majored in music. She played for their marching band throughout college. Annie, thank you so much for being here today with us.
Thank you for having me.
The next guest, Mrs. Renee Carnathan, is a Chicago girl, but she was stolen away to Youngstown, Ohio, many years ago. I've known Renee since we were in high school, and Renee surprised us after going to Youngstown, Ohio, and attending Youngstown State University that she was going to get married to a Youngstown young man named Cecil Carnathan. And she has stayed there, did not come back to Chicago except to visit. And after many, 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 many years, even though she was the first of all of us to get married, she has a baby. And that baby is Alexandra. And she has been under our wing for all these many years, and I was just so thrilled when she said she wanted to be a physician. And she is on her way to that goal, and we're going to ask Renee in a little bit to tell us more about that journey. So, Renee, thank you for being with us today.
And thank you again for having me.
Our third guest, and I'm going to do this fairly quickly, is Mrs. Mitzi Jones Patterson, who is also somebody that I've known from what I call the pre-bra era. We've known each other since we were 10 years old. We went to grammar school in Chicago. We went to high school where we met Renee. We went to college together. And Mitzi married Mr. James Patterson. And from that marriage, she allowed me to be the person to welcome her babies into the world. So I delivered both of her children, her son, who was older, and also her daughter, Layla. And we have been the aunties, the godmothers, and Layla decided at some point along the path that she wanted to be a physician. And Layla finished medical school this past June. Throughout the pandemic, she didn't even have a real graduation, as I would call it, a virtual graduation, and she was quickly ushered into her residency. Layla is a family medicine resident at Advocate Christ Hospital or Advocate Christ Medical Center in Chicago, and that is a 3-year residency. And Mitzi is doing some support right as we speak. And Layla needs some time, as you might imagine, to unwind, to relax after the challenges of taking some care of so many people who unfortunately have become infected by the COVID-19 virus. And so Mitzi and Layla are out of the resort for the weekend so that she can go back to work on Monday and get back into the trenches. Ladies, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to start with Annie. And Annie, at what point did you know that your daughter wanted to be a physician? And give me some idea about what sorts of things followed from her making that announcement, or what did you need to do to help her in that process?
Well, I'm at age 5, Taylor actually knew, and I'm not sure if it's something she looked at on television, but she said it. And unlike children that change from different careers every couple of months, she stuck to that. I actually knew that she would be a doctor. When I had a surgery, I think in 2006, and she was the one that cared for me and did it with such kindness, great bedside manner. She was just a little girl. But my sister ended up not able, who should have come over to take care of me was a day surgery, but I did need some aftercare, and Taylor took excellent. She said, oh, not to worry, Mommy, I got this. And so all I've done over the years is encouraged her. I have sat up with both of my kids. I think I could have gotten graduated elementary with them and literally get new diplomas graduating high school because I sat up with them at night. I did not just say do homework. I sat with them. So although I did a full-time job, I came home and made dinner, and I was up if they were working on a project, sometimes until 3 in the morning. I read every textbook that they read in high school. I read it just to make sure that there were no shortcuts. And so I set up my own questionnaire at home because I read the book and I had the answers. And so I encouraged them with that. When they realized how serious that was for me, I also attended class with them in high school. Doctors that I worked with thought I was embarrassing them, but I didn't turn up to surprise them. They knew that I would be there, especially if they were struggling with a certain topic. I went to class with them every day with my backpack on my back and got into problems a couple of times by having my phone on vibrate and not silent. Had my phone taken from me, but I was that parent that sat there with them. I just didn't say do it and went to bed. I cannot stress enough. I am thinking support, 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 because that worked for us. And they got, you know, quite a few opportunities in life, but almost everywhere they went, their mom was there. They went to the movie with a friend, their mom was there just to protect them and keep them safe. I didn't invade and sit right by their side. So they had that enough freedom to be able to take part in their outings. I also found that having them engage in extra activities was very important. Football and basketball. Taylor played the piano for a while, and then she did some ballet dancing. But when she picked up the clarinet, it seemed to love her, and she loved it. And so I really supported her with it by making sure she got all the equipment she needed. When they said it was time for her to have her own, it was difficult, but I did without some things to be able to finance her clarinet for her. And one of the things you said, Auntie, she actually did at TSU, she actually did her studied, her major was biology, minor in chemistry, but she did go to TSU on a music scholarship because she performed, the band director said she performed as if she was in the military. When she got there, she was ready, and so she was made, she was placed in many leadership roles while she was in the band, because when she got there, she was serious, and she's like, don't y'all waste my time. Y'all wasting, you're holding me up from doing what I need to do. So she was really very good with that. It encouraged me as well. I would stand around some afternoons while they were practicing, and then I realized I can be a better person if I walked around the football field while they were practicing and made, you know, encouraged me to be even a better person, make me sharper, pray and sing while I'm walking. So, again, support is what I would say is the biggest thing. I've just stood there by her side and encouraged her along the way. And being a nurse helped, because when she started on her road, when she started medical school, even while she was in TSU, there were some things I can help her with. I already knew it, and I could help. And the things I didn't know in details, I helped research it for her. So she, I guess you could say, even when she felt, if she thought she had no one else, her mom was always there sitting and studying with her, and I would read the information for her. Things that she didn't understand, I would take back to doctors that I work with and bring to her or have her come in and talk to them. So that was a blessing that I had. I actually had those resources for her as well.
Well, Annie, I find it interesting that support in her discipline of playing the clarinet proved to be so beneficial that she was able to receive a 4-year scholarship in music.
Yeah.
And how many people would think about that? That music, her playing of the clarinet, would lead ultimately to her to medical school.
Yeah, and that was very, again, I think people, when they think of the village, they're thinking mother, father, auntie, cousins, and sometimes your village might not be blood family. Again, I was blessed to work with a great team of people at Kaiser, and so there were doctors that would encourage me, and they would say, well, Annie, if she's doing well with it, encourage her with it. And I really did not know it could take her to college. I really didn't. She liked it, and I thought it'll keep her out of trouble. And so I encouraged her. But they would say things like, if it's not the clarinet, encourage her to play tennis. And one doctor told me, when you play tennis, hitting the ball, just having to eye and gauge when that ball comes helps you to be a better mathematician. So she was having problems with math at one time, and he told me encourage her with that. But of course, we already had our hands full with Claire, and I noticed that she got so disciplined with it, and I added tutoring with math, and all of a sudden noticed everything just came together. I think it's discipline, yes, encouragement, and having your kids a little bit more disciplined helps to put them on the road. But I did not know initially that would be a plus for us getting to college.
Well,
or financially assist to get when you got to college. But once I realized it, I stuck to it. I'm like, you're not giving this up. Even once in a while, and very rarely, but once in a while, she said, Mommy, I'm so tired. I'm like, but this is going to get you there. And I knew it. I think the band director spoke to them that if they stayed steadfast, that this can help them in college. And he spoke to me often about her and said that she was on the right track. And of course, I was in school all the time. So when it came around to do, when it was teachers' parents' day, most times, you know, they would say to me, why are you here? Because I was there all the time. I lived at the school, like I said, and I attended classes with them. So it seems like I was there just always somewhere to help. when something is needed.
Well, Annie, tell me what is Taylor doing at this time?
Taylor is presently attending America University of Antigua, which is in the West Indies. She is in her second year of medical school. And sometimes people say, how did she get there? And I said, just by the grace of God, because she had several applications in. She was on a waiting list for so many different places, and she was feeling a bit discouraged and did not want to keep putting it off. And a couple of people said, try the Caribbean. And although I'm from Guyana, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna send my child to the Caribbean. And she did some things on her own. She's very independent, which I'm grateful for that. And so she put in an application. It didn't take much time at all, and they accepted her. And you know, you're thinking, okay, she said she was gonna do this. Now we have the acceptance letter. Now this is real, and we have to go with it. So she is, like I said, doing extremely well. She's been on the dean's list for the last year, which is such a wonderful thing, me as a mother, that she excelled like that. And so that gave her a few more free dollars to be in Antigua. She's actually on her way home as we speak. She should be in Miami and should be getting in another 2 hours or so to Atlanta. So she'll be home for about a month before she has to go back.
Well, Annie, that is such great news. I am so happy that she is in medical school. And I'm also happy to say that you all are my nieces, and that just makes me even more excited and happy for you that you all are making this journey and you are being just that kind of mother to help get her where she needs to be. Now, I know you may have to leave us early, and if that happens, then we're certainly happy that you were here with us. But thank you, Annie, and I want to go to Renee. Renee Carson.
Thank you. Before you leave me, Dr. James, I want to thank you. And for those that don't know me, I cannot say how excited I am that Dr. James is our aunt. She is very supportive. Just by herself is my whole village. Very encouraging. Listens when you have a problem. And she supports us, and I cannot thank you. So sorry, y'all. I have to do it. Auntie, I thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Okay.
And my good friend Renee Carnathan, Miss Youngstown, who still is with us, stayed with us all of these years, even those times when we couldn't see her, but we knew she was there with us. And she has been the mother to Alexandria. We call her AJ, and we are just so thrilled to have her here. AJ is preparing for medical school, and I want you to tell us a little more about the program that she's in. But Renee, talk to us about your journey with AJ in her path. When did she know this is what she wanted to do, and what have you needed to do to help her?
Okay. Again, thank you for having me today. And trying to think back to when she actually said she wanted to be in medical. I'm thinking it was in, had to be in high school, I'm thinking. But it might have been grade school. I just laughed when I think about little, and she said she wanted to grow up to be a cheerleader, and I was like, that's not a profession. But I remember her saying that. But yeah, it had to be sometime in high school when she really got serious and said she wanted to be a doctor. And we've always had her in private school. I think that's partially because of my husband and my age. We were like, okay, we don't want to mess with this, because we only have this one, so let's just make sure that we do this the way we want to do it. And we did. We put her in private school, and it was the best choice, because they have excellent study habits. They instilled excellent study habits, and that's helped her all through. Yeah, in high school, she told us she wanted to be a physician, I'm pretty sure. And we were pretty surprised, though. We knew she wanted to do something, but we didn't think she was going to med school, but that's what she said she wanted to do. Yeah, she's always done well in the sciences.
We came to her high school graduation where she was recognized with many awards and did extremely well in high school and went on to college. Where did she go to college?
Went to the University of Detroit Mercy, right in Detroit, and she majored in biology.
And that did at any time did she waver from that thought of preparing to be a physician?
No, not she didn't waver at all. She kept focused on it. And I remember you telling her that when you guys came here for her graduation, and you sat her down and talked to her, and you said, "You want to go to med school?" She said, "Yes." She says, "You have to stay focused, AJ, all the way through college and all the way when you get into med school, you have to stay focused." And she kept that in her mind because she did. She stayed focused.
Well, I've been very excited that AJ has stayed focused, and she is in a program right now. Can you tell us about the program that AJ is in?
Yes, I can tell you something about it, but you know you and Missy know more about it than I do. But Missy started talking to me about this when AJ, she was still in school at University of Detroit Mercy, and she started telling me about a program. It's a pre-matriculation program to help her get into med school, to help her boost her MCAT scores. And I remember Missy just talking to me about it because she had said Layla was going into it. And I was like, okay, all right, what is that? I didn't know specifically, but that's it. She's able to study and take tests and things, and they offer different courses that she takes. And then in January, she'll be taking the MCAT again, and hopefully she'll be able to boost up her score enough for them to allow her into med school. But she's very excited about it. We were all so excited when she got in because we didn't know. You know, you never know, you know, what's going to happen when it's something like that. When you realize there are a lot of people applying for the positions and you don't know whether your child is going to get in or not.
Well, the school that she's attending is the Rosalind Franklin University, which was formerly Chicago Medical School. And we have another friend, Dr. Judith Bowman, who graduated from that school in 1996. And that's where we first learned about the program. And this is a Robert Wood Johnson program that does exactly as Renee says. It helps those persons who may have had some difficulty with the medical college aptitude test, which is a major criteria that is used for admitting people to medical school. And Layla, who we'll be talking about later, attended this school. And it's the same curriculum that the medical students attend, except they don't have as many classes. And if they do well in these classes, they can be invited to attend that medical school, or some will go on with the recommendation from having done well in this program and go on to other medical schools. So it is a great program. Many people don't know about the pre-matriculation programs. AJ is coming there from Youngstown State, but she had to come to Chicago. North Chicago, Illinois is where the campus is of Rosalind Franklin University. And so she's diligently taking her classes, which are demanding. But we're very optimistic that AJ will do well, will be admitted to medical school, and she will very shortly follow Layla, completing medical school and then going on to be not only becoming a physician, but learning one of the specialties of medicine. Now, Renee, you are an excellent student. And in fact, I don't even know if you tell people that when I see programs called like Jeopardy, and I recall they had a similar program when we were in high school called It's Academic.
Right.
And we were selected to be among the team from our high school to compete against another high school.
Oh, that was so lovely.
They were throwing some questions out to you and vocabulary to you, and you just did a super job. And but have you used some of that that studiousness about you in ways of advising and helping your daughter?
Yes, I have. I've told her, you know, over and over again, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to study. And but like I said, that being in private school, Catholic school here, that helped her tremendously because it gave her excellent study habits. And she knows she needs to study. She knows she needs to, you know, cut off, not with music, not with the TV or anything like that. She just needs to sit somewhere and study. And she, you know, she never hesitated about going to the library or anything like that. That was fine because she knew that's what she had to do. And she always did so well at it in high school and college.
And can you tell me, what has there been some role that others in your community have played in helping AJ?
Oh, yes. Her teachers, some of her teachers at in high school, some of the teachers in high school, they were always very encouraging with her and helping her about things that were going on, different workshops and things that were available to her. They were able to tell her that information help her get those things too.
Well, that is so wonderful. And so I think that it's important for others to know that there's often a story behind these health professionals in terms of their journey, getting to where they need to be. And it's sometimes lonely, but this is what they want, and we need to do what we can to help them. So thank you so much, Renee, for sharing this with us.
Well, thank you.
Our other virtual guest is Mitzi Jones Patterson, who is the mother of Layla Patterson. And she had an interest also in not in an instrument, but Layla was a dancer. And I can remember us being asked over many years to come to the dance recitals. And she progressed in all forms of dancing, in addition to toe dancing, ballet dancing, getting on point. And we didn't know, I think, for some time that that's what she wanted to do. She was talking about being a pharmacy technician, and she did this for one summer. And but she said, I tend to be more of a people person, and I don't think that this pharmacy is allowing me to do as much of that. But she had the opportunity to work at Advocate Hospitals, which is where her mother worked, as a lab manager for the Advocate Hospital Systems. And she was able to learn to become a phlebotomist, which served to introduce her even further into medical diagnosis, knowing what laboratory tests are ordered. So this, I think, served to give her a head start. But I can tell you that for her interviews, we always encouraged her to let them know about your history of dance, because we want in medicine people who are well-rounded, who have other experiences. While the medicine is very important and the knowledge of the sciences, but having some other experiences are extremely important. And so that is what Layla did, and she was very successful at the Rosalind Franklin University. In fact, she was tutoring some of the students that followed her, and she just had a wonderful, supportive teachers in that program, as well as the teachers who were supportive throughout her academic career. I think the place where she didn't have the support that we would have liked for her was in college. She attended DePaul University
in Greencastle, Indiana, on a very special program called the Posse Program. And while we thought that this would be an opportunity to have people who were supporting, I think that they were not as familiar with what were the needs, particularly of their students of color, their African American students. And in fact, they were not as encouraging and not as supportive. And I think that served to be discouraging at some point. But we continue to, and I certainly could see this having been in academic medicine and working with medical students, that I saw no reason why she would not be an excellent physician. And I felt she had many of the skills that would be required. And so I think we were able to provide some advice to her. I asked other physicians to help with advice, giving her a mock interview so that she had an idea of what that process would be like, the kinds of questions that were asked, would be asked of her. And so every place she's gone since entering medicine, she has just been very well received for her professionalism and her enthusiasm. So it has truly been a journey for her, and we feel that if nothing else, this pandemic has told us about not only the importance of other physicians, but having African-American physicians. And we'll talk about this more in our second half, but we really are lacking in African-American males going into medicine. We're still supporting our females greatly, but we need to see our men pursuing medicine, and that they have the kind of support to encourage them throughout this process. So we thank everybody for being here, and we're looking forward to some more discussion today about supporting our future physicians. And we're going to go to the top of our hour, and we'll be back shortly.
Here's your time for an awakening media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambom and Sister Nataki Kambom. 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones, co-host Boniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening with creator of Time for an Awakening and host Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard.
Do we have some callers
Saturday,
here?
4 p.m. till 6 p.m. Black Sister Talk with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. The Elders of Sankofa. And Sunday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Time for an Awakening. Host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out. Get informed.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host The Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at sankofa_think@out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Well, thank you so much. We are glad to be here. I didn't take the opportunity to introduce a sponsor who happens to be eDoc Advice. It is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you. eDoc Advice, www.edocadvice.com. We don't replace your health professional or provide your care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. Again, we're here today for supporting our future physicians, and we've introduced today three guests, Annie Mitchell from Atlanta. Her daughter is Taylor Cromwell, and Renee Carnathan from Youngstown, Ohio. Her daughter is Alexandra A.J. Carnathan, and Missy Jones Patterson. Her daughter is Layla Nicole Patterson, Dr. Layla Nicole Patterson. And they have truly had a journey, as have their parents, in bringing them this opportunity to be physicians. For those of you who have questions or comments, please feel free to give us a call at 215-490-9832. I think that we may have a caller at 414-364. Are you still there with a question or a comment for us? All right, well, we're still happy to continue to talk about this journey. I'm often have to think about the need of support. I've been a physician for 41 years, and I can still remember the many ways that people supported me, from my mother, who passed a year ago, but my mother was truly a support in so many ways, financially, of course. But even when it came to helping me with science projects, and I had the opportunity to work at the University of Chicago in the Department of Biochemistry. And this was made possible from one of my teachers, a biology teacher, who responded to my question about how I could get one of those really winning science projects. And she attended a program every Saturday morning. On her free time, she did not get paid, and she was there with other science teachers who were learning how they could partner with in the STEM community, who were willing to work with students to help them excel. And so she was able to hook me up with a biochemistry professor at the University of Chicago, because I had a science project that I could not figure out how to make it more sophisticated. And I started out with what causes the color of man was my topic, and that title ended up becoming much more complex. The effects of reduced glutathione on melanin formation in Drosophila and in mice. And I would go to the laboratory at the University of Chicago. I had a key to the biochemistry laboratories, and my mother had heard about some crimes that had taken place in at University of Chicago that hadn't been reported, which included some murders. So she was very uneasy, but she didn't discourage me, but she started going to the laboratory with me where I was working with the mice. Now, my mother is not a mouse kind of person. She is not a fly kind of person. But to help me, my mother was in the laboratory with a big mitt on her hand, and my mother was picking up mice by the tail to help me so that I could inject the mice for my project. That was one of the things that she did that was supportive. And then in medical school, my mother sat with me in the cadaver lab because we could go to the lab 24 hours a day. It was dark. It was scary in that cadaver lab. Sometimes you were there by yourself, and my mother would come and sit in the corner and read, but her purpose was to watch to make sure nobody came up on me while I was focused and concentrating on the dissection of the cadaver. Certainly something that she would not have ever imagined doing, but that's something that my mother did. And I am so grateful for the kind of support. But there were other examples of people supporting, as I said, teachers who took extra efforts. And then having done well in high school, there were people who remembered me when I came up for applying for funding to go to medical school. And they remembered that I had been a good student and very reliable. And I was able to go to medical school on a four-year scholarship where I paid nothing. My whole tuition. So when people say that they have these large debts to attend medical school, there was a program in Illinois that supported people who were from Illinois and who attended an Illinois school. So I had a scholarship like this, and two other of my friends, several people who had that kind of a scholarship. So we went to medical school with no expense. And what the expectation is that we would remain in the community and continue to serve. And I think that we have all, those of us who had that experience, have certainly done so. So those are people who aren't your family who can come forward and help. Renee, have you found any of that, people that have asked what can they do to help AJ?
Yes. In fact, one of Cecil's, my husband's cousin, he's a retired physician. And when he found out that AJ was going to, you know, trying to get into med school, ever since she started college, every year he gave her a stipend, a nice stipend, to help her get through. He said, "This is just for you. I know this is what you're gonna need something. Gonna need some expenses here. This is just for you." He just did that voluntarily, and he did it all through her years in college. So we were very glad about that, and she was really impressed too.
Well, that is so wonderful. My grandmother, who did not have beyond an eighth grade education, but in later years worked for a physician. And when I told her that I wanted to be a doctor, some of the family members, in fact, said, "Why would she do that? That's such a hard, demanding lifestyle. And why would you want her to do this?" And my grandmother, in her style, would say, I don't know. That's something she says she wants to do. And then my grandmother would have her apron on, and she would get $20 and hand it to me. Now, my grandmother didn't make but $50 a week, but every opportunity, this was her way of helping and supporting, and she would give $20 and makes a difference. I had an uncle who all throughout medical school would give me a $100 check every month throughout the entire time that I was in college.
Wow.
I mean, in medical school, and he would call this, he was investing in me and supporting me, and I was very proud throughout his life to do those kinds of things that serve to help him. He lived to be 93 years old, and I'd like to think that many of the things that I learned in medicine proved to be helpful. I was telling Layla this about reaching out to people to help with medical school and the expenses, and she would tell me about different people who she would consider, but that they had other responsibilities and they probably wouldn't be able to help her. And I told her, you ask them anyway, because I can assure you, that every family member, every neighbor will call upon you once you're a doctor to ask you for some help.
So
be on the prepaid plan and help these folks out while they are in school, because you know you're going to need a prescription.
Right.
You know you're going to need somebody to answer a question for you. And so this is the time to get help. And I have one friend who I asked her to support a young woman that's in her church. And she is a hair specialist. And so she does the hair of a young, this young lady who is in medical school at no cost.
Oh, okay.
So that's valuable.
Oh, yes, it is. You need that for your morale anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd have to say my sorority. I'm a Delta, Delta Sigma Theta sorority, as is Renee and as is Alexandra and Mitzi. And I found that my sorority was so very helpful to me when I would come to sorority meetings, and sometimes I was so tired, or sometimes I was disheartened sometimes by the way that I may have been received in my medical school program. But my sorors were always, always happy and welcoming to me. And I just felt so special. And it just let me know that I have a job to do. I have something that is going to be important, and so I can make the sacrifice to spend this time studying, because there are people who are counting on me to get this education. And 40 years later, I don't regret it, and I don't think that anybody who's helped me has regretted $1 that they have helped, and each one of those dollars proved to be extremely helpful.
You know, just that you, since you mentioned that about the Deltas, you're right. They're always supportive. Our sorors are always supportive of us. And I have to think of this time when AJ was in high school, and there was a class trip. They were going to El Salvador, and they were asking for donations for it. And at our local chapter, when we give out scholarships, we don't give them to members of the sorority family. We give them to people in the community. But so I didn't even ask the sorority for it. But my president heard about this trip, and she said, oh, no. She says, we have some kind of special fund we have for traveling. She's traveling. Oh, we can do that. And they did. They hooked it up just like that. I was like, okay, thank you. They gave her $500 to help her, you know, take care of her expenses in El Salvador. It was like the spring break trip. And so I was surprised, because I didn't say anything, you know, I didn't think we could do it, you know, I didn't think we would be eligible for it. But they said, oh no, we have a traveling fund, we can do that for AJ. Okay, and I was really glad. You know, she was too.
Absolutely. talks to you about the medicine? Do you feel like you're learning some medicine by talking to her?
Yeah, I am. I am. A lot of things she'll discuss with me, like especially the courses that she's taking now. She tells me what's interesting, and and I learn little factoids all the time from her conversation. But she stuff that she really gets into. She's really going on and on about. I'm saying to myself, why is she telling me this? But I listen. I do. I listen to her. So I'm learning stuff too.
Well, I generally say that if you learn all of the things about your family members' medical conditions, it
right.
helps you to remember them as
okay.
it applies to your patients. You mm-hmm. learn the name of the medication, the symptoms that you have. You may have noticed swelling in the legs of a family member, and you know that they have congestive heart failure. When you
right.
encounter this in school, then that makes it easier for you to come up with an answer, even if you didn't know it. You said, my aunt has this swelling and she has congestive heart failure, and this is the medication that they're giving her for that.
Right.
So that proves to be helpful as well. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we are focusing here on females, but we're entering what is almost a crisis as it relates to African-American males entering medical school. And some of the data has shown that many of them, upon learning about how expensive it is to pay for a medical education, that many of the fellows are just saying it's impossible and there's no need for me to even try. Renee, have you heard anything about some of the fellows that have tried to enter medical school and what's going on with them?
No, I haven't. I do have a sorority sister here in Youngstown, and it's her nephew. And he went to Meharry, and a local doctor helped sponsor him getting into Meharry. But he's always been, like he always says, he can't believe that AJ's old enough to go to medical school now, because he remembers AJ when she was like 5 or 6. But he's very encouraging. But I haven't heard anyone say that. When you said that statistic, I was very surprised about that. I just naturally thought that, men were going into it just as much as women, but apparently not.
Well, the men are not replacing the ones that have retired.
Wow.
And so we're beginning to see that, and we are very concerned. We're very proud of the females, but we are concerned about what is it that's going on. I have a son. My son has been a very good student. And I think that he would do very well in medicine. And he thinks along those lines very much. And he asks questions about it. But he has really not pursued it in the way that I would have thought that he would. His
mm-hmm.
interest was playing football, and he was very serious playing for the University of Wisconsin Badgers. He's interested in writing rap songs, and he does that pretty well. But I think that he would be a good physician.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, has to be his decision. I can't persuade someone to go into a path
right. That
is as challenging as medicine is, unless their heart is truly in it.
Yeah.
And so he has been more interested in coaching. He wants to help young people, and I hope that he achieves the goal that makes sense for him. But I know that he would do, academically, he would do very well in medicine, and perhaps he will find his way in that direction. But I think that we may encounter some of the fellows And we may need to do a little bit more in terms of asking them about their interests, finding people, other physicians, who will talk with them about the career, about what's involved in paying to go to medical school. And I've told many people that don't let the cost of medical school discourage you, because I can't think of anybody who really has not been able to get into medical school because they could not afford it. That a way comes possible. Grants are made possible. I know Layla got some extra funds made available to her, and others are getting some funding that they hadn't expected. So we would still let that not be a deterrent in doing what you want to do. And I think that we need to, as a community, take a more active role in letting our medical schools and hospitals know that we want to see more African-American physicians.
Right.
And to hold them accountable for that, to have them be more aggressive about inviting, supporting them toward that goal. And there's several programs which are called pipeline programs that work with young people. I was certainly in one of those programs in high school, but I don't think that we're doing as much as we could do. And I think that our community, if we're not inspired by the fact of the racism that exists in healthcare and how that impacts our healthcare, we need some people who understand us. We need people who know what questions to ask and can initiate the kind of research that will serve to benefit us so that we are healthy and are doing well. And I don't think that time has certainly demonstrated that other people are doing some things, but it's just not enough. So
right. We've
got to have more of us and let people know that we see that your hospital doesn't have many black physicians.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy now. You can go on the website, which I do, and I'll look at a department and I will see what does the makeup of their faculty, their residents, their fellows. And so we need to become more active, writing letters to the hospitals, to the medical schools, and say that introducing them perhaps to some young people and getting them involved in programs that serve to support them, so that when we go to the hospital, there are people that we feel that we can relate to in order to make sure that there are more of us. And that certainly is a goal of mine as I move closer to the retirement phase, to make sure that I can share what I've learned over these 40 years so that they're not starting from scratch for everything. And again, we open up to anybody who has a question or comment. Please give us a call at 215-490-9832. We are the Sankofa Council of Elders, and we're here discussing today supporting our future physicians. And we have here Mrs. Renee Carnathan, mother of Alexandra A.J. Carnathan, who is at the Rosalind Franklin University in North Chicago, Illinois, as she is preparing to be accepted to medical school and will join us as another very needed health professional. Do we have anyone on the phone who's got some questions for us? And Sister Dede, anything you have to share with us?
You know what, Sister Jane, since you, yeah. I think this is such a wonderful, important supporting the subject. I think this is a beautiful show. I mean, I'm just sitting back, just loving it. And you know, as you and the other sisters were talking, all I can think about, you know, even when I was reading about Miss Dr. Rebecca, we were, you know, our children aren't being taught about these things in school. And then I've learned, too, a lot of times parents, you don't hear parents anymore asking their children, you know, well, what do you want to be, you know, or what do you like doing? You know, just kind of taking time with them. And I know times have changed, you know, where a lot of times that parent got to work and everything. But that one young lady was the lady that spoke at first. I mean, she worked and she was right there with it, you know, with her baby. She didn't just say, you know, do your homework and then she went to bed. No, she was right there. And a lot of times if there's two parents in the home, I mean, that should be done too, you know. And nowadays, like I said, it's a different day, age, and time. So nowadays, our children need that love. They need that push. They need to know, you know, that someone is behind them, that they have that type of support. And talk to them and show them that there's people of color, that there's people that look like you, that's doctors and nurses. Because a lot of our children nowadays, these teenagers, they don't see that. All they see is this garbage on their phone and on TV. So they don't see our black doctors, our black nurses, our black lawyers. We need all that. We, you know, that's one reason why a lot of black folks won't even go to the hospital, because you don't see anybody look like you. And you don't trust the white folks no more.
Well, that's certainly a point. Sister D, do we have somebody here? Is that 414-364? 414-364. Do you have a question or a comment for us? Okay, well, thank you. We're still here listening out for any calls or questions that you have. Sister Dee brought up some excellent points about parents perhaps not taking the time to ask children what they're interested in and engaging them in that kind of a conversation. And it sounds like while things have changed, what they're looking at on their cell phones does not seem to be the kind of thing that's asking that question. What are your plans, and what do you need to do to achieve the goal, except to sell them things or to tell them how they're dressed and what music they're listening to. And we can't allow that to be the only thing that is facing them, because everybody's going to need somebody in the health setting at some point or another. And why not it be us?
Right. Exactly.
It could just as well be us as anybody. It's a very rewarding career. This is a challenging time right now, but overall it's extremely rewarding, as well as it being demanding, to be able to figure out what it is that's making that person not feel well. What is it that you can do that can make a difference? We had an event this past week. One of our good friends had a stroke. And the fortunate thing, I think, is that this friend is someone that I've grown up with, and she's also a physician. She's now retired as an emergency medicine physician, but she was able to recognize that something was not right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't quite what she was expecting, but she was able to ask her sister who was nearby and to say, I'm not feeling right, I'm not sure what it is, but you need to call 911. And they called 911. She called 911. She got her to University of Chicago, who immediately evaluated her, and what they found is that she was, in fact, having a stroke. They were able to initiate the medications that make a tremendous difference in those individuals who live or die having a stroke, and for those who will be left with some disability as a result of the stroke.
That's
we are so grateful she got that medicine that she needed right away within an hour of her symptoms, and her symptoms began to go away. And by the next morning, they had improved even better. And after 2 days of evaluation in the hospital and treatment, she was discharged home, and she has no need for physical therapy. Speech was initially slurred. She had weakness on one part of her body, and all of that has gone away. I want to think that it was
such a blessing
that her medical background made a difference in knowing what to do, because there's many of us, particularly among African Americans, I could see where they would say, I'm going to drink some tea, I'm going to go to bed, and in the morning I should be feeling better.
Right.
But under these circumstances, the time lost of initiating treatment could have greatly made a difference in her doing well and surviving. So we are just so happy to see our friend back at home and feeling better. But we are grateful, and I'm grateful that she's had the benefit of 40 years of being a doctor and taking care of so many other people. It proved to be helpful for her personally. And so I don't think that we often think about that at some point we may need this help. And I know it certainly has come in handy for me, being a physician, in terms of recognizing the seriousness of certain things and how to go about getting the appropriate treatment that I've needed to have. But we've talked about supporting our future physicians, but these recommendations, these experiences that we're talking about are not unique to physicians. I think we need to listen out, as Dee Dee had mentioned, asking questions to the young people. They may choose to be a teacher, as my son has talked about. Even though I'm thinking he needs to be a doctor, but there are people who need to be teachers. And they need to be encouraged. They may want to be an attorney. They may want to be an opera singer. There's so many opportunities that are there, but they're not going to just knock on the door and tell them it's here for you. There's things that are going to have to be done. But if we don't know how to help our children, then we have to know people that we can go and reach out to ask them to talk to our children, or give us the names of people who know somebody who knows somebody else to talk to our children and help support them.
Yeah, because a lot of times it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Definitely.
Absolutely. That certainly makes a difference. And you just don't know how your support is going to be helpful. Just as I have said on our program before, I delivered a little boy, and that little boy is now the lieutenant governor of the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, my goodness.
How would we have known that? We would play and we'd go on trips. And we'd go to the hotel and swim in the pool along with all the other children. But I never heard him say anything about an interest in politics. He went to Alabama A&M. He helped some people with their campaigns. That's the first that I knew he had any interest in politics. But the next thing he ran for some offices. And my support to him is I allowed him to use my office as his campaign headquarters.
Okay.
So that proved to be a form of support for him. There were times when I needed my mother taken someplace and driven, and I would give him money to do that. And he said that was helpful so that he could pay his phone bill.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not knowing that he was going to end up being lieutenant governor. And it was just so thrilling to be at the Wisconsin Capitol in Madison at the Capitol building and to go to his office and to see him sworn in and his inaugural address. It was just a fabulous experience. Mm-hmm. But you don't know what your children are capable of.
Right.
You just need to help them to make sure that they get the kind of skills, as Renee said. She put her child in what she hoped to be the best place that she would learn what she needed, so that she would learn to write and read mathematics and to help her be prepared for whatever choice that she had in mind moving forward. So support in many ways is necessary to have our children be successful. And not everybody has some, but I think that certainly can make for a more pleasant experience, knowing that there are people who are counting on you, who think a lot of you, and that makes it easier to stay up those late hours and trying to take good care of people. Do we have any other callers here? We're at 215-490-9832. We're talking about supporting our future physicians. And we had caller 414-364. Is that caller still there? If so, you're certainly welcome to address your comment or question with us. Renee, can you, and your husband, of course, have raised Alexandra, and we often talk about what mothers do, but do fathers do something to help with this process?
Oh, definitely. I always say Alexandria is a daddy's girl, and she is, because Cecil and I, we worked opposite turns. I worked days and he worked afternoons. So when she was little, she would be with him until like he had to go to work in the afternoon, and then he'd drop her off at his mother's house and I'd pick her up after work. So yes, very, very encouraging, especially in the sports field too, because I was really never that athletically inclined, and she enjoyed being outdoors and doing sports. So he did help her a lot, and he got her started with track, and he got started with basketball, and he also played volleyball in high school, all three of those sports in high school. And she was able to go to college with a partial track scholarship and a partial academic scholarship. And when she graduated from University of Detroit Mercy last year, she was debt free. Because the way the scholarships worked out and the small amount that we had to pay every year, she didn't owe the University of Detroit anything when she got out of there. So that was a good thing.
He was
very encouraging to her. He's always been like that. He's a very good father. He's fortunate. I picked the right one.
That's good. I guess you stayed there. Having said that, it's okay that you stayed in Youngstown.
Right.
Because that proved to be, in the long run, very helpful.
Definitely.
And I had forgotten about that A.J. Is an athlete and ran track.
Right.
What a blessing that was in terms of providing for her education at a private college.
Right, definitely.
So these are things as well that people don't think of. I knew a
pharmacist who went to school on a track scholarship. So these are certainly some things to encourage their interest in sports. And as you said, her father played a big role in supporting the pursuit of the sports. And that's certainly something that other parents need to know, that this is a very viable thing, as also as we heard from Annie, that they can use some of their other strengths as ways to support them in their pursuit of an education. So mm-hmm. that is very, very exciting to yeah. know that.
Yeah, that was good.
Now, you have a family, you have some extended family, and I know that it probably has been challenging with you being so far away from your nuclear family, your parents and your siblings, but what were some of the ways that they were able to reach out to your daughter?
Oh, well, they would call her frequently, and of course they sent money to my brother and my mother and father. They sent her money, and they would call, you know. And then when she went to Detroit Mercy, Cecil and I both had relatives in Detroit, cousins in Detroit, and they would check on her frequently too. So she wasn't like she was, you know, alone out there. Like I was when I came to Youngstown, but she had people in Detroit, and they would come and pick her up and take her places where she needed to go, or invite her over for dinner and stuff like that. So that was really great too. We were glad about that.
Mhm. Well, that certainly is an example. Just inviting you over to come for dinner.
Right. Right.
And you have some time to talk and relax. And I'm sure it was certainly well received when those invitations came.
Definitely. And one couple, that Cecil's cousins, they're married. They don't have any kids. And they told AJ, oh, you come on over for the weekend, and you'll have your own bedroom and your own bathroom. You can take a bubble bath. Oh, she took advantage of that.
Oh, boy.
When you live in the dorm, it's like, it ain't like that. So she said, I have my own bathroom and my own bedroom for the whole weekend. I said, yeah, that was nice. But they realized, oh, yeah, let's get her out the dorm for a minute. And they did. They took her.
That's a treat.
Oh, you know it was. She loved it. She loved it.
She did. That's a treat.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is something I try to remind folks of, too, is be sure to reach out to those folks who have supported you. And let them know that you appreciate it, no matter how small it may seem. It was an act of love to extend themselves to you in the best way that they know how, because in many instances, they haven't been that road. Some may not have been to college, but they are respectful of the efforts that our children have placed in trying to advance themselves. And so I'm so excited as we're hearing so many different ways that people have supported one another. I had a neighbor in Chicago, a man who had not gone beyond elementary school. And oftentimes I had a science project, as I mentioned, that I had to prepare for. And he would often help me find the necessary materials, or would use some of his tools to help me construct what I may be using for my science project, or things like watching out to make sure that I got into the house safely as I was getting off of the bus, that there were neighbors that knew that I was doing something that had me out, but they would watch out for me
to make sure that I got in safely. And that, of course, is a very valuable sort of thing to do. And sometimes just to be able to talk to us, just talk to our children, because it can be kind of hostile in many of the settings that our children find themselves trying to learn, particularly those that are not attending one of the historically black colleges. You are sometimes made to think as though you are nothing, and that you are there as a token, that somebody just found you on the street, and not recognizing some of our talents and our strengths, which can be extremely disheartening when people are not recognizing us, and not only doing so, doing things that serve to put us down. And sometimes we don't even know that this is being done to our children.
Right.
Particularly when you hear some that'll tell you that they've changed their major, and we hear that a lot for those people that are pursuing medicine, that they start out that way and then someone tells them, well, you're probably not going to get in. And that I had that experience in undergraduate school, where I had had a stellar experience in high school. I go to college, where I have had this laboratory experience, research experience, and there was a point after some exam, I think it was maybe organic chemistry, and which serves to be a problem for many people. And it's interesting because you don't really use that much organic chemistry in medicine for that to have been such a headache. But I, there were times when the chairman of the department would say, well, maybe you need to do something else other than medicine. My mother had a bachelor's degree in education and a master's degree in guidance and counseling. And my mother went to my college, which was almost 200 miles away, just like I was 7 years old in school. She came up to the school. She met with the chairman of the department, and she had to let him know that she sent me to school. It was his job to teach me and not to discourage me.
Right.
And she was not going to accept that, that he better teach me. And that was what she was paying for me to do.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I was glad she did it, because at that point I was looking to be in something else. In fact, I took an aptitude test, and it only showed that which we already knew, is that my aptitude was toward the sciences. But I just was in despair. But I'll tell you, many years later, that same teacher contacted me for some medical advice.
No.
His wife. And I gave him the information that he was seeking. He was very appreciative. But I used that opportunity to tell him that he was really out of line by attempting to discourage me.
Yeah.
And I have obviously done well in medicine. I was able to help him as I've helped others. And to add to this, I said, you have not been to medical school yourself. You have a doctorate, and you are a good teacher.
Right.
You don't know what it takes to be a doctor.
That's right.
And how dare you even try to discourage me? And he just kind of dropped his head, and he said, you're right. Because I don't know. But how many people along the line did he turn around?
Right.
Yes. But Dr. James.
You don't know.
But Dr. James, remember, how Malcolm X said when he told his teacher he wanted to be a lawyer, and the teacher said, no, you're better with your hands, so you should be a carpenter. But in these schools and stuff, I mean, even a long time ago, and maybe, you know, even to this present day, we don't know how many teachers done have done or said that to our children, because just about everywhere you go, all the teachers are white. They don't see people that look like them. And people that don't look like us, they're not trying to help you achieve or be something. You know, to tell somebody that comes to you and you ask them what they want to be, well, I think I want to be a lawyer. Then you turn around and tell them, no, you can't be that. You're better with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be a carpenter.
Well, I've spoken to many black physicians, and I've asked them who encouraged them along the way, and many of them will tell me that none of them have ever had a black doctor, and that the white physicians that they had did not ask them what were their plans for their future. Now, that I find just terrible, that you're taking care of children. You know how impressionable they are, and here would be a great opportunity to support them, just to talk with them about what their interests are and to find that they're not being spoken to. And I'm sure that's not universal, but I've heard it so often.
Uh-huh.
It's troubling to me that where there's that opportunity that you could show some interest, that you could encourage, that we not take that opportunity. So we need to know that those people who are around our children are going to be supportive and not negative, because sometimes the children are afraid to tell us when some of these sorts of things happen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
You're true.
Well, this gives me an opportunity, if I can, for the Sankofa Council of Elders to know that we have an opportunity for people to serve as sponsors for our program. And just as I'm serving as a sponsor with the EDOC Advice website, we also have opportunity for others to serve as sponsors. And so we ask our sponsors, let you know that you are welcomed. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Or have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcast efforts can be made to a Cash App or to PayPal. Cash App, use the account of $Nirvana, NIRVANAINSTI, or PayPal, Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Consider being a sponsor for the Sankofa Council of Elders, timeforawakening.com. And consider, please, looking at EDOC Advice. At EDOC Advice, we provide specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOCs, who are licensed physicians and health professionals, who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practice. We are so happy to have had our guest with us today, Renee Carnathan from Youngstown, Ohio, representing Alexandra Carnathan,
and also Taylor Cromwell, whose mother was here with us earlier, Annie Mitchell Cromwell, and Mitzi Jones Patterson, in support of her daughter, Layla Nicole Patterson. We are most grateful for your time with us today, and to our audience that are here with us today as well, to hear us talk about the experience of supporting our future physicians, and hopefully you've gone away with some ideas that you might have to support some of the young people that are around you, as well as those family members who may in fact be wonderful health professionals. We clearly need them in our community. We look forward to seeing you again next week for another broadcast of the Sankofa Council of Elders on timeforawakening.com. We appreciate this opportunity, and good night.
Good night. Good night, and thank you.
Thank you.
It's moving now.
for you, I already know. Jonathan Livingston Seagull ain't got nothing on me.